Hey, this is Jamie from Stillmire Games, and I am back for another episode where I dig deep into everything that I've learned from one of my favorite games, and really one of my favorite brands at this point, because there's so many different versions and expansions for this game, and that game is Clank. I'm going to show you the Clank Legacy box, because that is the box that I've kept. It's the biggest. You can see it's very, very deep. I have all my Clank stuff in this box, but I'm talking about Clank in general today, and what I've learned from it, what I've learned from it as a designer, and a little bit what I've learned from it as a publisher. I've broken this down into top 10 things here, starting kind of loosely with, I guess, the least important, but these are all pretty important things that I've learned, and going up to the things that I love the most about Clank, that I've learned the most from. So the first aspect that I wanted to mention are the art and theme. And I wanted to highlight one specific thing about the art that I think is clever, and you can use this if you are trying to have a good budget for your art. Or reasonable budget for your art. Let's see if we can find a great example of this. Yeah, so here's an example. So basically the idea here that I'm trying to convey is that a lot of the cards in Clank use the same back. And of course, as I'm looking here, I'm not seeing great examples. But so here's an example of kind of a general background for the art, or generic background. And let's see if we can find another one that uses that same background. This one actually has a different generic background. This one has it. So my case in point, I'm not making my case in point well here, but a lot of them do share. Here, I'm starting to come up onto the repeats here. So they basically didn't have the artist create a new background for every illustration, even though every illustration of the game is unique. And I think this is a clever way to save a little bit on art budget, especially when you have a lot of cards in a game. So just a little note about the art there. I love the theme of Clank. So the theme is that it is a heist game. And I love the heist theme in books and movies. And it's a heist game that doesn't try to push the heist theme too much. Like, you are essentially running a heist. You are running into a dungeon and grabbing a treasure, an artifact, and you're going to try to run out and survive as you run out. There are a lot of heist games that kind of follow the tropes of a heist movie, where they're like, okay, in the first phase of the game, you got to gather your team together. And in the second phase of the game, you're going to gather all the tools that you need. And then you're going to actually execute the heist. And Clank just says, here's your dungeon. Here's the treasure. Go get it. However you want. And so you're essentially telling your own heist story, gathering cards into your deck of people that will help you along the way. And that will give you extra skills to help you achieve that goal of accomplishing the heist, but it's so freeform. You're kind of, it's like a heist movie that starts with the heist at the very beginning. Like, you're jumping right into the heist. You're not getting all the backstory. You're jumping right in. You're kind of creating that backstory as you go. I'm stretching a little bit on the theme here, but that's what it feels like to me, and I really, really love that about Clank. Last about the theme, Clank is, in my opinion, it has like all the elements of a dungeon crawler, even though it doesn't look like a dungeon crawler. So it is, you are literally going into a dungeon to fight monsters, to gather treasure, to gain loot and things like that. And I think I included it near the top of my favorite dungeon crawl video a couple years ago, and got some flack for it because it doesn't look like a dungeon crawl game. It doesn't have hexes on a board where you're moving miniatures around on these hexes to fight monsters on hexes. And that's really the one big difference here. Like, it is not a tactical combat game, which I think many dungeon crawl games have become tactical combat games. Whereas Clank is like what I want a dungeon crawl game to be. It flows so smoothly and quickly as you go through a dungeon to gather loot and fight monsters. And a lot of time isn't spent fighting the monsters. It's more, you're kind of planning out how you want to best optimize your turn. Anyway, I won't go too deep into that. I'd love to hear your thoughts on whether or not you think Clank is a dungeon crawler, or if you think dungeon crawlers have really moved into a different category of tactical combat games, and have kind of maybe should be Maybe that classification should change a little bit. Anyway, don't want to go too deep into that. Let's talk about setup. So this is one of the few things that I'm not super high on in Clank, but I can understand why they do it. And so this is something that I really try to pay attention to as a designer, and that is the amount of variable board setup that is necessary. So here's an example of one of the Clank boards. And on this board, you have to place a lot of tokens at the beginning of the game. You are placing... at least in some versions of Clank, in later versions of the Clank, they get rid of a certain aspect of this that I'll mention in a second, but you have to randomly put out all the artifacts. You have to randomly put out all the major loot tokens. I'm forgetting what they're called right now. What are they called? Yeah, I don't have another rule book right here, but there's some secret tokens. So major secret tokens, you have to randomly put out two minor secrets on many of the spaces. And it results in quite a bit of setup. And you're even putting a different number of tokens in the Clank bag, depending on the number of players. But really, it's the number of tokens that you're putting on the board itself. And this adds quite a bit to setup, to the setup time. However, the reason they did it, and the reason I end up appreciating it and that I love Clank anyway, is that because you have a limited number of tokens on this board, and actually, I misspoke there a little bit. You don't actually randomly put out the artifacts. They go in a certain space, but because they are tokens that you need to put on the board, you still need to physically find those spaces and put them on the board. Anyway, the reason I think that the game benefits from having a number of unique tokens on the board itself is that it creates a race to get to those tokens before other players. If there's a major secret right here, there's a major secret token right there, I might want to be the first player to get there because I can grab that token and remove it from that space. Whereas if every time a player, so if you, the other way of doing this is to not put a token here during setup and just say every time any player moves to this space, they get a major secret. It really takes away that tension of trying to be the first player to get to that token. So I can see why they did it. In a later version of Clank, one of the expansions, they removed part of this by saying that for the minor secrets, whenever you move on a minor secret space, you gain a minor secret. There isn't a limited supply there. You don't have to set them up at the beginning of the game, but you do still have to put the major secrets and the artifacts on the board at the beginning of the game. I think you could even skip the artifact part of that, but the visual of seeing which artifacts are there and aren't there is pretty helpful. That's number 9, the setup. Number 8, I wanted to at least talk a little bit about the deck building, even though the deck building is kind of ingrained throughout the game itself. Clank is a deck building game. You are building a deck from a variable row of cards. So every turn, at the end of the turn, you will reveal some cards to replace any cards that were taken in that card row. And you're adding them to your deck. And a lot of it is traditional deck builder stuff. You're drawing 5 cards at the end of your turn. You're playing those cards, all those cards, and discarding any extra cards at the end of your turn. All that is said and good, said and well. But I think Clank is elevated a little bit because it isn't only a deck building game. It is also this game where you're navigating your meeple throughout this dungeon and doing a lot of other things. So I like that the deck ties specifically to what you are doing in the game itself. You are using this deck to facilitate all the cool stuff that you're doing on the board. And it's not the first game to do this, but I think it's the deck building game that made me appreciate having a map or some other significant element to the game the most, more than any other deck building game before it. The same designer, Paul Denon, he also designed one of my other favorite games, Dune Imperium, which also does something similar. Completely different game, but it uses a deck of cards, a deck building mechanism, but also with a board where you're replacing workers. A few specific cards I wanted to mention in terms of the deck building, let's see if I can find good examples here, is that a number of cards have acquire benefits. Here's one right here. So this is just a nice little touch to deck building. So this is the core ability that you get when this card shows up in your hand. But when you acquire the card, you get something right away. I think this is really, really nice because it means that throughout the game, even if it's later in the game and you're gaining a card that may not even show up ever in your hand, you are still gaining something right away from any of these cards, from their acquire benefits at the moment that you gain them. And it might be a really crucial moment. You might really, really need that one additional boost at that moment. The other thing are when arrive cards. Let's see if I can find a card that has a when arrive. So these are cards that kind of help tell the story of Clank and that you are exploring this dungeon, and not only are you exploring the dungeon, but stuff is showing up and encountering you just as you are encountering it. And so there are lots of cards like this that have like danger on them, but I'm not finding an example right now. But there are cards in this game that have when arrive. Arrive, here's one. So here's a dragonling that says, arrive, all players get +1 Clank. So this monster has shown up in the card row, it's popped up in front of you, and it's presented a problem for you to deal with. So I really like this kind of active engagement of the deck of cards itself in your adventure, you aren't just encountering these cards, but the cards are encountering you. I'm looking for another example here for something else that I want to talk about in a second. So that is the deck building in Clank, or at least parts of the deck building. Number 7 is Clank in Space. So I'm going to start talking about some of the different iterations of Clank. Clank in Space is a game that I've played twice, and I enjoy what they did with it. So they kind of, instead of having a deck building, or not a deck building, a fantasy theme, in Clank in Space, it uses a lot of sci-fi tropes, and they do so, the humor in Clank in Space, I think, is excellent. But I think Clank in Space is a great example that making a game more balanced doesn't necessarily make it more fun. I think Clank is significantly more fun than Clank in Space. And Clank in Space, what it added, is basically it looked at a perceived problem in Clank, that it is possible in Clank to run down into the dungeon, grab the treasure that is closest to the top of the map. Let's see if I can find that treasure, that artifact. So here's an artifact that's pretty close to the entrance. So you can enter the dungeon here, you can work your way down through these ice caverns, and let's see how you get there, and then go down here and get, did I miss it? Anyway, you can navigate down here and get this treasure, and then just walk right out of the dungeon. And the game will end faster that way if you do that. You may not win, but the game will end faster. And so this was perceived as a problem in the original Clank for some players, because they wanted to hang out longer in the dungeon to run around and get more cool stuff. They didn't want to be forced to leave the dungeon really early in the game, among other concerns, I think. And so in Clank in Space, they address this by saying that before you are even allowed to steal an artifact, you have to hack 2 data ports. So there's another task that you needed to do before you could steal an artifact. I like the thematic integration, but I found that by removing that strategy, by removing that tension, really, of speed, a speed play, a speed strategy, it made the game less fun. That is just my opinion. I totally respect those who love Clank in Space more, but I think that's an important design lesson to learn, that more balanced doesn't always equate to more fun. That's the lesson to take away here. The other thing from Clank in Space that I thought was interesting that they added, and this is a good thing in my opinion, are the factions. So there are, I believe, 3 different factions in Clank in Space, and it does something that a lot of other deck building games do, where if you have played, say, a purple faction card on your turn, and then you have another purple card that you play, that second purple card might have an ability that says, if you've already played a purple card, gain this benefit. Which I think is a nice thing. It's a nice way to guide players through the deck building process. If they're struggling to make a decision, you're kind of saying, okay, you like purple cards? Go after a lot of purple cards this game? So I think that's a nice addition to Clank in Space. On to number 6, and that is the expansion, Adventuring Party. So I have a few expansions from Clank, including Adventuring Party here. And I was really excited about this expansion. But oddly enough, it has been one of my least played expansions of Clank. And I wanted to discuss why, because I'm still trying to figure it out myself. In Adventuring Party, one of the key things it adds, I'm going to mention something that I really like that it adds in a second, but one of the key things it adds that I was really excited about was asymmetry. You get these different characters that add asymmetry to the game. So you can play as Whiskers the Cat, and Whiskers the Cat has his own little mini game that you're playing. You can play with all these different characters here. They have their own little set of rules, their own little mini game, their own little starting deck that's mostly the same, but the abilities here are vastly different. I love the idea here. I love that they went for asymmetry and they went all out for asymmetry. They didn't just add a little tweak to it. They went all out. But I find that one of the joys for me when I play a deck building game is starting on even footing with all the other players and letting the asymmetry emerge from the cards that I buy that they haven't bought, basically. And this has kind of surprised me a little bit because I actually really like asymmetry in games. Asymmetry generally gets me to return to a game over and over again, like Terra Mystica. That's why I return to Terra Mystica over and over and over again. But for some reason in deck building, it doesn't stand out all that much. And so it's made me reevaluate when are the right circumstances that a game can benefit from asymmetry and when asymmetry can actually hinder the experience a little bit because you're not starting on that even playing ground as all the other players and kind of creating your own asymmetry as you play. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Why you think, which genres and mechanisms you think asymmetry works really well for, and if you don't think it works as well in others like deck building. However, Adventuring Party does add one thing that I really like, and I don't know if I have an example here easily that I can easily find, but it adds something called React cards. Let me see if I can find one while I'm talking about it. React cards are cards that encourage you to really pay attention to other players' turns. Yep, I don't have one handy here. Because you can play them when it's not your turn. So they might say, like, okay, if another player, I don't know if this is an actual example, but if another player moves three spaces on their turn, three plus spaces on their turn, you may react to this by playing this card out of turn. I thought that was really clever to give in a deck building game where you're mostly kind of heads down focused on what your own deck is doing, as well as what's happening on the board. But in terms of your own deck, you're focusing on that. It gives you a really good reason to pay attention to other players' turns and the cool stuff that they're doing on their turns. So that is Adventuring Party number 6. And number 5 is one of the core aspects of the game, including the name of the game, and that is the clank bag itself, the clank mechanism. Two of my favorite mechanisms in games are bag building and deck building, and clank has both of them. It also has push your luck, which I love in games. The bag building aspect of clank is that you have all these clank tokens. I just have the actual clank tokens in the bag right now. There are times throughout the game where you need to draw clank out of this bag, draw these tokens out of the bag. And if your tokens come up, if a red token came up, that would be a damage. I would lose one health as a result. I really like this mechanism, largely because it is it's kind of a rubber band in the game. There are certain cards that are really powerful, but they might say, do this awesome thing, but add 2 clank to the bag. Let's see if I can find an example here. Some of them even have arrive benefits. Yeah, here's one, or acquire benefits. So if you acquire a treasure, many of the treasures in the game, they give you a lot of points. They give you maybe a nice ability, but because you got it, you kind of rattled the dragon. You were noisy when you stole this, and so when you acquire this treasure, you add 2 clank to the bag. But it's a penalty that may not actually hurt you in the end. So it's a penalty, but not a guaranteed penalty, because you're adding clank to the bag, but those tokens may never be drawn. You don't really know. I really like this. I think having an indirect penalty like this is hugely important to Clank's success. I love the mechanism itself, because these cards could have all said instead, lose 2 health, like gain this thing and lose 2 health. But instead they add a level of separation between the good thing that you're getting and the bad thing that might happen in the future, but you don't know for sure. It might not happen, I think that Clank mechanism is really, really clever. And so this whole idea that you are sharing this bag with all players makes it even more sweet. That you each don't have your own bag of clank. This is a shared bag of clank. This represents all the noise that everyone's making as they are moving throughout the dungeon. This collective bag building is brilliant. I really, really love that. I have that at number 5. At number 4, I have one of the best legacy games, in my opinion, ever designed, and that is Clank Legacy. I loved the experience of Clank Legacy. I have a separate video about it, maybe even 2 videos about it, but I really, really love this legacy game. And a few elements of it that I wanted to highlight. One thing I can't show you, which is what the board, and let's see if I can actually show you from the rulebook, what the board looked like at the beginning of Clank Legacy. No, I don't have it handy here. But at the beginning of Clank Legacy, the board is only like half created. So you're kind of moving on a map. You're not moving into a dungeon. You're moving southward on a map. And the bottom half of the map is just empty. There's nothing there. And so you have this wonderful sense of exploration that you will be adding the different locations to that map as you're playing. And even more brilliant than that, this is such a clever touch. They made the board double-sided, and each side is different. And so in some games of Clank Legacy, you'll play on one side of the board, kind of the overworld of the board. And in some games, you'll go underground, and there's a whole other side of the board that is all the different underground stuff that you can encounter. This is so, so clever. I think this is something that I would love to see in every Legacy game where you're doing something on the board. Use the other side of the board. The other side of the board is there to be used. Use it. So brilliant. I mean, we did something kind of like that in Charterstone, but really we did it. I mean, both sides of the board in Charterstone are identical. And you use the backside of the board to play another campaign if you want to. But I like what Clank did even more with that. Clank Legacy also does something really interesting with competitive cooperation. So you are all still competing like in a normal game of Clank, but you are also the game does these weird things to encourage you to cooperate with other players. Like there might be a quest that is a limited time quest. And And if no one accomplishes that quest, something bad might happen for all players. It might not happen, but something bad might happen for all players. And you have multiple quests like that spread out all over the board. And so a really fun way, the fun for us we found in playing Clank Legacy was to discuss those missions as if we were cooperating this quest and say, okay, I'm going to go take care of that thing on that side of the board, that one quest. And Megan, which quest do you want to accomplish, Megan? So Megan would choose a quest. We would kind of divide and conquer with these quests, even though we were still competing every game for the most points. I thought that was a really, really clever way. And it would, I think it would only work for a campaign game. There are semi-cooperative games that aren't campaign games, but I think it works really well for campaign games because we knew if one of those bad things happened, it would affect all of us, not just for the next game, but for multiple games in the future. The humor in Clank Legacy, I thought, was really, really well written. I don't want to spoil any of the things they do to encourage this type of humor, but I thought the writing and the style of humor in it was really, really good. And also, the event cards. So there is an event card system. So I mentioned how, like, this deck of cards in Clank, because when cards arrive, it's as if a monster has shown up and has arrived, they've jumped out in front of you. There are also event cards that are just shuffled into the deck itself. And when an event card shows up, you have to do the thing on that card. This one says, each player who reveals a movement icon from their hand gets a dollar. So right away, all players, if they have a movement icon in their hand, they can just reveal it and they get a coin. And it says, if any players don't execute a 2-cube dragon attack. So there's these things that can happen that can benefit all players, but if certain players decide not to reveal a card in that instance, or they can kind of decide, do I want to reveal, do I want to not reveal, that can affect all players. Back to that kind of cooperative, competitive element of Clank Legacy. But I really just like the integration of the event cards into the deck itself, rather than having a separate deck of cards that you need to remember to draw at the end of every turn or something like that. They are just shuffled all together, and when they appear, they appear. I think that is really clever about Clank Legacy as well. Number three, the different strategic paths in Clank. So a lot of deck building, well, I won't talk about other deck building games here. I'll talk about Clank specifically. Clank has a couple different paths that you can follow. You can go after movement. So you can go after movement so you can run deeper into the dungeon and still get out of the dungeon with really good treasures and secrets and things like that. You can go after movement so you can run just a little bit into the dungeon and run out with a treasure. So movement as it relates to speed, I think, is a core strategy you can follow. You can kind of pay attention to, at least, and mitigate damage in the game. So you can try to not put much damage into the bag itself. And when you get damage, you can kind of work on cards that help you with health so that you don't die. And so that's kind of, it's more risk mitigation, but there are strategic choices as they relate to your health and damage in the game. There are the coins. So there are the coins that you're getting in the game. These are points at the end of the game, so you can really focus on getting coins, and a lot of this comes down to defeating monsters. So getting damage in your hand, so the damage icon, this icon right here, dealing damage, so you can deal damage to monsters and get the nice things that they drop, which are often coins. That's a big strategy of the game, trying to get the most coins. Because they relate to points. There's also victory points. So you can try to get skill, and as they tie to victory points, there are cards that give you skill. So here's the skill icon. You can go after skill, because skill can improve your deck. You can buy cards to improve your deck, but it can also help you afford the more expensive treasure cards that give you points. So I love how all these systems integrate. Kind of the damage connects mostly to coins, but also helps you move through the dungeon faster because there are things that are going to get in your way as you move through the dungeon. There's the skill, which improves your deck, but also gives you points for the end of the game in the form of just victory points. And there's the whole movement aspect that makes sure you can actually move throughout the dungeon to get to all that stuff that you want. That's strategic path at number two. At number two, I love games that can be expanded with additional maps. Ticket to Ride is kind of the master of this, right? Ticket to Ride has so many different maps around the world, and they don't even necessarily, I think Ticket to Ride always introduces some new mechanism with these new maps, but I don't think they even need to. I think just adding a new map is almost enough. But Clank, a lot of Clank's expansions, my favorite expansions from Clank, add new maps. They just give you a new map to move around with. And my favorite one is the underwater expansion. So you're diving down to from a sunken ship to an underwater cave, and you're swimming through these underwater systems. They add a few new icons to it, including this scuba icon here. But I When you think about game design, and when I think about game design, I sometimes do think about expansions. And one of my favorite ways to expand a game is to add new maps, new boards. And I haven't done this with many of our games, really, at this point. I don't have a game that expands well in that way. But someday I hope to, because I think it's just a wonderfully fun and thematic way of expanding the game. You add, with a map like in Clank, you add new routes that entice you to take different ways. You can add different symbols to the map. So in this expansion, including having, so there are monsters that you can fight with one damage so that you don't take a damage. There's also just damage. So just take a damage. Unless I'm confusing that with a Clank icon, but I'm pretty sure that is just take a damage. And there's the scuba icons, which say, and these foot icons, they're saying that you need to spend an extra movement to move through here. But if you have a certain artifact, you can move through here faster. I just love the different, when I look at a Clank map and when I'm moving through a game of Clank, I love the different paths that you can take. Every path reminds me almost of a path that I didn't take before. So I'm like, taking this path, that means I'm not going this way. I'm forging my own path through this dungeon. I love doing that. And I love the variety of maps to make that happen. And a few other things about the map that I really appreciate are the ice caverns. They can be a little frustrating when you're playing the game, because if you walk into an ice cavern, you cannot move out of it. You are stuck there until your next turn. This is, I think, a great design example of how something frustrating for players can actually be create the best experience for all players, because it prevents the ability to really run super, super quickly through this dungeon. The game is making you pause at times and focus on things other than movement. So I think those ice caverns do that really, really well. There are also some locks, adding to the theme and the mechanisms here. There's some locks that say, like, you can't get in here from this direction. And then, however, you can use your money to buy, I forget what it's called, but there's an artifact, a key. You can buy a key, of course. You can buy a key that can let you through those locked doors. So you feel like you're breaking the game, even though the game is designed to be broken with that key. I really, really love that aspect as well. Last, I talked a little bit about it, but I love, most of all, the way that tension is designed into Clank. So I already mentioned how there are limited tokens on the board. So there's the tension to get to those tokens first. There's also tension to get to certain artifacts first that are more or less valuable, depending on how fast you want to run out. There's the tension of your health, and as it relates to Clank, like how much Clank can you put into the bag? There's tension every time you pull stuff out of that bag, and there's tension related to whether or not you were going to live or die based on your current health level. There's also the tension of where exactly you end up in the dungeon at the end of the game. There's a line in the dungeon that says if you're below that line and the game ends, you cannot win. Like you won't score anything. But if you get above that line, you are qualified to score. You are allowed to look at your score, and you are among the players who are allowed to win. And if you get out of the dungeon, you get a bonus of 20 victory points because you made it all the way out. So there's kind of these layers of tension. Like you can die, but you can try to mitigate your health. You can try to stay alive and get up to the middle layer here, which you can win. It's harder to win when you're there and not get out, but it is possible. Or you can try to get all the way out. And try to race to get out and get those extra victory points. And the tension there is even compounded even more because you can try to be the first player out, but if you're not the first player out, that probably means you're getting better and more stuff, but you still need to get out in time before you die. And when any player gets out, the first time a player gets out, that starts a timer that ticks down to the end of the game. Also, the one other element of tension that I haven't mentioned is the card row itself. There might be cards in the card row that you really, really want. So there's tension there. Like, am I going to be able to get to this card that I really want in time? That's kind of standard deck building stuff. But also because many of the cards in the game have the dragon icon, like this one, happen to draw one that has the dragon icon. Every time you or any player buys a card from the card row, that means that another card is going to replace it. And that card might have a dragon. It might have a bad arrive bonus that impacts all players. So there's this really nice tension there, especially near the end of the game, of do I buy this card that I really want from the card row that might give me 4 or 5 points, but I know if I do that, it's going to be replaced by another card that might hurt me upon arrival. There's also the tension there of maybe you have plenty of health. You're not worried about getting hurt at the end of the turn. And so you might try to buy a bunch of cards from the card row because they might slow down, because the cards that arrive might slow down all other players. There's so many layers to the tension in this game, and that really add to the push your luck feel of it in many different aspects of it. That makes I think tension is just so well designed in Clank. If you're looking for tension in your game, this is the game to look at. I'm getting excited about Clank just talking about it. I hope you can tell that. I love this game. I love all the little design touches in it. And hopefully this gave you some good food for thought. I'd love to know what you learned about game design from Clank, whether it's the expansions, whether it's some of the things that I talked about today or some things that I missed that I didn't talk about. Let me know in the comments below what you think about the game and what your favorite aspects of it are. Let me know. All right. Thanks.